కర్మ బ్రహ్మోద్భవం విద్ధి. బ్రహ్మక్షర సముద్భవం కర్మ బ్రహ్మోద్భవం విద్ధి బ్రహ్మాక్షర సముద్భవం. తస్మాత్ సర్వగతం బ్రహ్మ నిత్యం యజ్ఞే ప్రతిష్ఠితం. తస్మాత్ సర్వగతం బ్రహ్మ నిత్యం యజ్ఞే ప్రతిష్ఠితం. So Krishna is analyzing karma yoga from different angles now. We already saw several angles. First angle is from the sense of duty, as a duty to the Lord. This is the Lord, this is the commandment of the Lord, and I need to just follow. That is the sense of duty. And then second angle was as a sense of worship, as an yajna. Whatever action I do, I offer it to the Lord. It is an yajna I want to perform, whatever may be the action. And the third angle he looked at it was as a means for chitta shuddhi. I am interested in moksha. For moksha, I need chitta shuddhi. For chitta shuddhi, I have to have karma yoga. So as a means to get moksha, I want to gain chitta shuddhi. From that angle of chitta shuddhi, Krishna discussed it. And now we are seeing the fourth angle as the need for the maintaining the harmony in creation. In creation, everything is in harmony. Humankind should not be the reason to make the harmony split. Because every other thing in creation, whether it is animal, plant or anything else, they all maintain their dharma and their contribution to maintain this harmony. The human alone should not, he should be part of that full chain, he cannot contribute to split that chain. So as a sense of harmony, Krishna is discussing those things. We already saw one such thing in the last class, Annad Bhavanti Bhutani. From the annam, from the food, the beings are born. All things in creation, they are all born. Parjanyate anna sambhavaha, from the rains, the annam is born. How annam is born? From the rain, because water falls and then all the plants grow. And yajnyat parjanyaha bhavati, the rain itself is born only when the people, they live harmoniously and do every action as an yajna. That's what they do. And yajna karma samudbhavaha, yajna is possible only through actions of human beings. So this is the first cycle Krishna has discussed in the last class, that we saw in the last class. Now we are going with the next one. And we saw in the last class, yajna is born out of action. That is the previous loka. That's what yajna bhavati parjanya. That's what we saw in the previous loka. Yajna is born out of action. But here we should remember that any action cannot become yajna. We have to be clear about it. Yajna is born out of action is correct. But any action cannot become yajna. Only when the action, the karma, when it is selfless karma, when it is a selfless karma only, it can be called an yajna. I cannot do any action and then say, oh, it's an yajna. No, it should be totally a selfless action. So an action where the interest of the individual is not there, the interest of the individual is a lost, but the interest of the majority of all the people of the entire creation is taken into consideration. Only that is called yajna. All others is not yajna. All others are only kamya karma, a karma done with an intention of gaining something for the person, for the individual. So it is a karma done selflessly with the awareness of the totality. I am part of the total. I am not alone myself. I am part of this entire creation, this cosmic makeup. So with that sense, I should do any karma. So with the sense of totality, when it is done as a worship to the Lord, then only that action becomes karma yoga. Otherwise, it is a mere karma only. It will not become a karma yoga. So karma yoga alone can become an yajna, and karma can never become an yajna. A karma done by somebody, an action, can never become an yajna. Only when it is done as a karma yoga alone, that can become an yajna. And how do we know what is karma yoga and what is karma? You know, that's an important question. A lot of people have their confusion. What is karma yoga and what is karma? What is the difference? How to know how to convert karma to a karma yoga? Action being the same, we said earlier, only the attitude changes. Action remains the same, but attitude only changes. So this knowledge is given by the scriptures. How a karma is considered a karma yoga, that knowledge is given by the scriptures. They talk about karma and karma yoga. And the difference between karma and karma yoga or yajna is difference between the karma and dharma itself. Dharma is given to us by the scriptures. The Vedas give the dharma. What is the dharma? What karma is done, I may become more happy by doing some karma, others may suffer. There are people who do karma, it may make me happy, but at the cost of somebody else. That's also action. That can never become a karma yoga. Because it's a kamya karma. So in karma yoga, not only the individual who performs the karma is happy, it also makes everybody else around also happy. It makes the entire cosmic makeup happy to live in harmony. That is the difference between karma and karma yoga. So Krishna says, karma brahmodbhavam vidhi. The yajnakyam karma, the karma that is the righteous action that is done as an yajna. The karma that is done as an yajna, that is born out of Brahma. Karma brahmodbhavam. It is udbhavam, it is born out of what? Brahma. Brahma here means Vedas. Vedas are the scriptures. So the actions as enjoined in the scriptures alone can be done with a selfless interest, that becomes a karma yoga. Any action cannot become a karma yoga. So that is the beauty of actually the Vedas. Any action prescribed by the scriptures will be good not only for the individual but also for the entire creation. So whatever is given in the scriptures, if they are performed, then it is not just only for the individual that will bring good, it will bring good to everybody. So that is why we have to follow the scriptures and then follow the karmas enjoined in the scriptures. So now so many people, they may do research on various things, you know, our type of worship, our homas. People do a lot of research. Why we have to do all these homas? You are offering so many things into the ghee, you put into the fire and so much smoke comes, it may cause pollution. People go through all these, you know, analytical things, intellectual things, rational things, all that thing they go through. Actually, many of the Vaidic karmas, which were thought to be originally superstitious by a lot of these rationalists. Now, those people, many of them are telling that they are all good after all. Those karmas are good, no problem at all. The homa smoke is wonderful. People say it has a lot of, you know, powers of curing. People, you know, they all kinds of things. They do Agnihotra. You know, in this country, there are a lot of people who do Agnihotra. Many of them who are doing Agnihotra are Americans, Natal Americans. Actually, our friend, our Krishna Shastri, who is our friend, Professor Shastri, who is maintaining our cow sanctuary, he is selling a lot of these cow dung cakes to a lot of people who want to do Agnihotra in their home. They will have this cow dung cake, they will put it on this. I saw one person doing it also. And she just goes there, she is reciting some mantras, whatever mantra she has learned. I couldn't make out what she was reciting. And she puts it on the stove. And she is pouring some ghee on that. She is standing and very sincerely, extremely sincere. Going on doing this Agnihotra. She believes that by doing that Agnihotra, these are all people. He makes up actually for the feed, for the cow, by selling this cow dung. Throughout the country, he ships packets and packets of cow dung. He ships throughout America. So many people, they just do this Agnihotra. And they have got some initiation from somebody. Recite these mantras, offer it to them. They go on doing this. So these are all research societies. These societies. So the homa has a cleansing power. They now try to say all these things. It has a cleansing power. So those members, they do Agnihotra everywhere. So actually there is a Agnihotra.com website also is there. I'm not sure. So Agnihotra.com, right? So there's an Agnihotra.com website also is there. So Krishna says, what is proper action if you ask? Then the scriptures say, karma brahmodbhavam vidhi. Karma is given by the Vedas only. Whatever the Vedas prescribe, those karmas you do, it would do good to you and also to others, to all the other people. Then what about Veda? Veda is not a human discovery after all. Who gave the Vedas? The Lord gave the Vedas. It is supposed to be apaurusheyaha. That is not of a human origin. It is supposed to be given by the Lord. So any human discovery, that may become obsolete soon. Yes, human discovery is subject to become obsolete. After some time, it can become obsolete. But this is given by the God. So the Vedas are there, that was there long, long ago, they are still there, it is going to be there forever. So the Vedic value, it will all go on increasing only, it will never become obsolete. Because it is created by the God, it is not a human origin. That's why there is an author, Fritz Capra, right? Fritz Capra, he has written Tao of Physics. There's a book, I don't know how many have read that. Tao of Physics, beautiful book, and the turning point, Tao of Physics, the turning point. It's a beautiful book he has written that. And he says that the Eastern way of living is ideal at all levels. That is his discovery. Eastern way of living alone is ideal at all levels. All levels means what? From economics, from medicine, from politics, from psychology, sociology, anything. At all levels, the Eastern way of living alone, that is applicable. That's what he writes. Even modern medicine, he goes to say that the doctors analyze only one part of the individual. If you go to the doctor, he may be a specialist in ears. Another, maybe he is a specialist only in the right ear. Left ear, something else. For a left eye, there is a specialist. Right eye, there is another specialist. I mean, that is how when they try to go in deep and analyze, they become so focused and try to only look at one part of the individual. Whereas the scriptures, the system of medicine developed by the scriptures, looks at the individual as a total. That is why they are called holistic medicines. Because whatever they have, it may take time. It may not be a quick fix. You cannot get a Tylenol to remove a headache like that quickly. But it is a holistic healing. So that is how our scriptures say. That's how they. So even a doctor, according to him, has to learn Vedanta when he deals with the people. Looks at the people as a whole, not just as a person to be dealt with some you know quick fix kind of a thing. Okay. So far as the approach of medicine, economics, etc., the holistic vision is the angle of the Vedas. Vedas look at them as a whole, as a society. It just doesn't look at the third quarter earning. That is the problem of today's economics. All the companies are worried about what? First quarter, second quarter, third quarter. If two successive quarters you are down means you are gone. They will remove you from the list. NYSE list, you are gone. Two quarters. No. You have to look through 15, 20 years, 30 years, 100 years. Unless you look at the economic system as a whole, you can never. This is all but now the globalization. Where is globalization here? Here, per hour rate is here what? How much? What? $7, $10. How much per hour rate in India? 10 cents? Not even 10 cents. Where is globalization here? Where is global economy? So, when there is so much of disparity in all these things, there is not. This globalization are only localized the things. Try to be applied in terms of other intent globally, not with the fundamental transport globally. So that's what is being done here. So the doctor thinks that we are only a physical bundle. That's what the doctor, the physician thinks today. You are only a physical bundle, right? So annamaya kosha level alone he thinks. Whereas the body is annamaya, pranamaya, manomaya, vijnanamaya, anandamaya koshas. All these five koshas together is the body. So he thinks only at the annamaya level. So then perhaps he thinks, oh no, some mind, it is also psychosomatic now. Not just only a thing which is doing with the physical thing, there is something with the mind. How much you can understand the mind? It's always a question. Mind is always a big question. Because you can never understand it that easily. So then there are all these neurology, everything fails. You cannot go beyond a certain level. So we have to revert to the Eastern way of life. That's what this Fritz Capra writes. All these things he writes. So the turning point, the West is slowly discovering this. That's what he is writing. So the total vision is the dharmic vision only. The scriptural vision alone is the total vision. All other visions are all only partial visions. This is given by the Vedas, by the scriptures. So this Vedic vision can never come out of mind which has only a limited vision. So that is why we call it apaurusheyah. It has not been a human origin. If it has to come out of the mind of an individual, it will have only a limited vision. Limited by the mind of that individual. Whereas this is a total vision. The total vision can be given by the totality, namely the Lord. That's what he says. So it has to come from someone who has the cosmic vision, who is the Lord, who alone has the cosmic vision. That's why he says, Brahman Aksharam Samudbhavam. The Vedas are born out of Ishvara, the Lord. So how the Vedas are born? They are born out of Ishvara, the Lord. So Brahman, Akshara Samudbhavam, that is why it is free from all defects. Anything written by a human being will have some defects. Somebody would have written something yesterday, another tomorrow somebody will come and disprove it. And they will say, this is the medicine that is going to work. After some time, they will say, no, this is not the good medicine. Some other medicine has to come. All these things, discoveries will all come because they are all made by humans. Whereas in Vedas, it is defect-free, flawless. There is no inconsistency anywhere in the scriptures. There may be thousands of Upanishads. No Upanishads contradicts each other. There is always the same subject given all through all the Vedic scriptures. How is it possible if it is made by a human being? That is the argument they give. So this is Paurusheya Dosha Rahitam. That the Vedas are supposed to be without any doshas, without any defects, that is created by a human being. It does not have any human defects at all. Paurusheya Dosha Rahitam. Therefore Krishna says, Tasmat Sarvagatam Brahma. Tasmat Sarvagatam Brahma. In our tradition, everything was based on the Vedas only. Our tradition is called the Vaidika Dharma. This is Sanatana Vaidika Dharma. The based on Vedas. Vaidika Dharma is what is based on the Vedas. Our Dharma is not, Hinduism is a name given by somebody else. What is our religion? What is our faith? Sanatana Dharma is our faith. Sanatana Vaidika Dharma, based on the Vedic scriptures alone, is our faith. So Vedas are the fundamental things for our living. Our livings are just as enjoined to the Vedas only. Our culture is called Vedic culture. It is a Vaidika Dharma. From Kanyakumari to Kashmir, it is same. People may differ in their eating habits. One may eat rice, another may eat wheat, because that is grown there more. That's all. But the fundamental thing underlying all the people, all through everything, throughout the continent, is only the Vaidika Dharma. That's the Vedic sentiment. So Krishna says, Sarvagatam Brahma. So the Vedas are supposed to be Sarvagatam, all pervading. All through. That is why we don't have two types of lives at all in our culture. There is no two types of lives. A secular life and a sacred life, no. In all other cultures, there are two types of lives. There is a secular life separately, a sacred life separately. Sunday is sacred life. Fridays are sacred life for them. Other days are secular life. For us, no. Every moment of our life is only sacred life. Whether it is sacred, we don't call it a delineation between sacred life and secular life. All life, everything throughout, is our music is divine, our bhajans are divine, everything is divine. For even the rickshaw driver who starts his auto rickshaw in Madras, the moment he comes to the rickshaw in the morning, he tucks the steering wheel, puts it. That's innate. It's implicit in him. It mechanically it does. Because that is born, it is inside the blood. So everything is divine. So there is nothing like this. He will do chandanam and kumbhum to that machine. Actually, when I was working for Atomic Energy, and on the Saras and Durga Puja day, Ayudha Puja, they got it. On that day, the workshop will not work. Everything will close at 12 o'clock. That's it. You cannot even get a screwdriver from those guys. Everything is put, and of course, they do not work for gas. But they will put all chandanam, kumbhum, and all that thing, agarbati everywhere, throughout. See, that is the faith. For everything, every action you do, that is divine. That's what the Vedic scriptures teach us. So that is why we don't have two types of lives at all, a secular life and a sacred life, a divine life. Both are said to be one in the same path. So for us, the Veda does not come in the puja room alone or in the class alone. Vedas do not come just only in there. It comes in every moment of our life, every moment of our breath, guided by Vedic scriptures or Sanatana Dharma. That is how we live. That is why it is very, very difficult to understand our religion. Because all other religions are all religions which are centric religions. This is a natural religion. You cannot understand that at all. It is like more complicated than even all these, ultra nanosciences. Very, very complicated to understand our religion. Every day there is a festival, every day there is a lot of expenditure too. Every day festival. That is, all 365 days we have festivals. What are these festivals? Why they are there? So many of these festivals are. Whereas all other religions have only a particular day of worship. Particular this thing for them, because that's how they are all practiced. So we even think that our forefathers, they were all, the way we put them, the intelligence in all of them, the way that has been going on all these years, all these festivals and all this expenditure, because of our attitude, not because of it. It's not something which we just wanted to create something. It is something that is born in us, born with us all the time. So ritual means awareness of Vedic life. Any ritual means what? Awareness of Vedic life. Our tradition, through some function or the other, they want to remind us. What they want to remind us? That yearning, eating, producing children is not the aim of life. The aim of life is different from all these. Every festival tries to remind us that. Once in a way, a Ramanavami, a Janmashtami. What does it say? Another Ramanavami is gone. You have grown older by one more year. Another Janmashtami is gone. Oh, you are grown older by one more year. When you came into the class, by the time you left the class, you have grown older by that much length of time. Every moment we change. When you came in, when you go out, you are not the same person. We have to be reminded all the time how anityam life is. We always think that these 70, 80 years of life is permanent. That is why Acharya used to wonder, in Kashi everybody is watching all these, you know, these corpses going, being burnt on the banks of Ganga. But everybody who follows this, what they all think? I am permanent. He watches hundreds and hundreds of these bodies cremated. But he thinks he is permanent. That is the vichitram. That is the greatest wonder. Acharya wonders. This is the wonder of the greatest wonders. Because he thinks that he is nityam. So as a constant reminder to us, all these festivals are kept. Every time you conduct a festival, we rejoice with all the sweets and all that. That's fine. Rejoice them, no problem. Understand the intent, why it is kept there. It reminds us our tradition. It reminds us our way of life. And it reminds us the satya vastu, what is ultimate reality is. It reminds us every moment of time. If you remember our spiritual life, then the festivals will be celebrated accordingly. Otherwise, it will be only a social thing. Or this Diwali will be only a social thing if you do not understand ourselves, the remind ourselves of the spiritual import behind all of them. So there is no need to spend even a single penny in any of them. We may spend, that's why people might spend all that. Festivals are expensive. No, there is no need to spend even a penny. Just to remind ourselves of the intent of these festivals and understand the spiritual basis for these festivals, that is adequate. So every day I should spend a couple of minutes asking the question to myself, am I equivalent to one of those animals which is also eating, sleeping, producing, doing the same thing, or am I different from them? That question we have to ask ourselves. When somebody asks us, it is going to be embarrassing. We have to ask it ourselves, because that's how it is. Or am I equal to a Satpurusha who is trying for my spiritual progress? That's what I have to ask. I have to always try to live a life where I will look for the spiritual progress. So that's what Pucharya says. So normally in Shivaratri, all those things, normally Shivaratri, you know, people have to be awake for the full night. So how to do that? Engage yourself. Play cards. Lot of cards. I've seen people playing cards. You have to be awake. So they know that they have to be awake. That portion is known. Why you have to be awake? And this is the way you have to be awake? Alertness should be there, everything. Sattvic nature should be there. Alert means what? You should be alert every moment of time so that all those demons, all these Atma Shatrus don't enter here. All these Kama Krodhadis, when they enter here, then you have a problem. They are all Atma Shatrus. So we should be alert to not to let them come in. Alertness is for that. Jagrati is for that. Not to play cards and keep a vigil for the full night. Shivaratri became like that. These are all problems. How we approach life is a question. So we have daily function. We have daily prayer because spiritual life is a lifelong affair. It is not a once a week affair. It is a lifelong affair. That's why every day we have all this. Krishna says, Sarvagatam Brahma. That is why he says it is Sarvagatam Brahma. Everywhere Vedic tradition, everywhere Vedas and Vedic culture must spread. That intent should be understood. That spiritual progress then only can be made. So, nityam yajne pratishtitam. Constantly, every day, nityam. Constantly, yajne pratishtitam. It is present. That yajna is present. It is established everywhere. Where yajna is, there Veda is. If there is yajna, there is Veda. Automatic. Because whatever is given in the scriptures only is done as a. Yajna is not, as I told you, is not just doing a homa. Any action done with a dharmic intent is yajna. So, because there is no yajna without Veda, no yajna without scriptures. So, wherever yajna is going on, then the Vedic wisdom is present in that place. That is what we should understand. Evam pravartitam chakram.
Evam pravartitam chakram. Evam pravartitam chakram.
Nanuvartayatihayaha.
Nanuvartayatihayaha. Nanuvartayatihayaha.
Evam
ఏవం ప్రవర్తితం చక్రం నానువర్తయతీహయః అగాయురింద్రియారామః మోగం పార్థ స జీవతి అగాయురింద్రియారామః మోగం పార్థ స జీవతి
సో కృష్ణ సేస్ హియర్ స్ట్రాంగ్లీ ఎ హ్యూమన్ బీయింగ్ ఈస్ ఎ హ్యూమన్ బీయింగ్ ఓన్లీ వెన్ హీ మెయింటైన్స్ దిస్ సైకిల్ దిస్ హార్మనీ ఇఫ్ హీ మెయింటైన్స్ దిస్ హార్మనీ ఇన్ క్రియేషన్ దెన్ ఓన్లీ హీ కెన్ బి కాల్డ్ బై ద నేమ్ హ్యూమన్ బీయింగ్ దట్స్ వాట్ కృష్ణ సేస్ వీ థింక్ దట్ అ సెల్ఫ్లెస్ మ్యాన్ ఈస్ ఎ గాడ్ అపాన్ ఎర్త్ దట్స్ వాట్ నార్మలీ వీ థింక్ ఓ హీ ఈస్ సెల్ఫ్లెస్ పర్సన్ గాడ్ హీస్ లైక్ అ గాడ్ దట్స్ వాట్ వీ నార్మలీ థింక్ కృష్ణ సేస్ ద సెల్ఫ్లెస్ మ్యాన్ ఈస్ నాట్ గాడ్ అట్ ఆల్ but he is a man worth that name. He can be called a person, he can be called a human being, he is just worth that name, human being. You don't consider him a god or anything. To be selfless is your duty. That is how you should be, because all in creation, to maintain the harmony, that is how one should be. Because if you look at every animal or plant, they are all doing that only. They are all selfless only. That's all those things. That is why everybody wants to protect the plants. We all want to protect animals. We all protect plants. Is there anybody who says, I want to protect human beings? All the programs are all there protecting all these things. Because if a plant is lost, something is lost. Really something is lost. But if a person is lost, maybe the society gains. We don't know. Depending on how we live, we don't know. So a plant is leading a selfless life. But I am eating more and contributing little to the society. A plant takes little and contributes a lot to the society. Whereas I take more from the society and contribute very little back to the society. So for the plant, everything is useful. Life or death from the plant. As far as the plant is concerned, whether it is alive or whether it is dead is useful. Anything, any part of the plant is useful. We can make use of them. For a man, after death, the skin is useless, the teeth is useless, everything is useless. Maybe hair is useful because they make wicks out of them. I don't know what else is used for this human body. Nothing else. So while living also, it has not been useful anyway for others. Because he has been always a selfish person, leading a self-centered life, useless guy for anybody else. So I am leading a selfless life. It is not that I am a great person at all, but I am falling in line with total creation. So if I am leading a selfless life, I cannot claim that I am a great person or anything. I am only trying to fall in line along with other things in creation. I am trying to keep that chain, that the chain of the harmony of creation, I am trying to only maintain that. That's all I am trying to do. So I am selfless, leading a selfless life. Somebody doesn't have to claim, oh, I am all selfless, sir. I have no problem. All actions I am doing, I have no personal interest at all. You don't have to claim and propagate it anywhere. No need to proclaim anything. That is what is expected of someone. So it is not that I'm a god upon earth. For somebody to become a god upon earth, what he should have? He should have atmajnanam, he should have. Only when the person knows of the self, then only he can be called a jnani, he can be god upon earth. So as long as that is not gained, all other things are just to fulfill the requirements for having gained the name human being. That's it. All of these are all mundane things. But the only problem is what? When humans do not have value for dharma, then this person can do what? He cannot, not only he doesn't have any value for dharma, he can damage more because he has got more power than other animals or plants. In plants, this problem doesn't exist. They cannot calm other things. For example, an animal, what it can do, if it runs amok, it can bite 10 people, maybe 20 people, may hit another, may cause, you know, four or five deaths. Whereas this guy goes amok, he can wipe off a society because God has given him that power. So if that power is abused, misused, he can wipe off a society. All other things don't do that kind of damage at all, like him. Because that is the nature of this person. If he goes amok, he can cause enormous harm. So that's the problem. So if this person violates this dharma, he can cause more damage than any of those things like an animal or a plant. So only human beings, they will loot even during a tragedy. Or this Katrina thing, you know, so many things were going on. The Katrina victims, they are all in that dome, there's no light, everything is all a problem. All things were going on. In India, we know, when all this fire and all these things breaks out, so much of looting, so everything goes on. This is how this guy does. That's how, but actually, to be honest, when I was watching this tsunami thing in Japan, I was amazed. I was in tears. Reason is, you know what? We are teaching all this dharma, trying to learn this dharma, and trying to follow it. Well, you should be this, we should be that. All hypothetical things. They live that. That is the difference. They live that. How can it be possible? This guy doesn't have food for himself. Waiting in line with a child on their arms, and the reporter comes, whatever he got, he wants to share with that reporter. He has not taken food for 2 days. Where that mind comes? They live like jnanis. We try to learn these hypothetically, and then after the class we forget. See the difference. They are also the same, the human frame is same, exists in the same, the globe. Where that comes from? The greatness of a person is seen only when in such circumstances. Not when everything is hanky-dory. When such circumstances come, then only you see how people are, how a person is conducting himself or herself. So when I was looking that, I was really in tears. This is the society living like this. What we are trying to preach here, trying to learn from this Bhagavad Gita, trying to remind ourselves every moment, they live that life. What a uniqueness of that society. Anyway, so Krishna says, evam pravartitam chakram yaha na anuvartayati. Yaha na anuvartayati. Anuvartayati means does not fall in line. Na anuvartayati does not fall in line. The one who does not fall in line with this cosmic cycle, with this cosmic harmony. Here also we should remember what? The man need not maintain the cycle. The human being does not have to maintain the cycle because the maintenance is already taken care of by the Lord. The Lord takes care of the maintenance. The creation is already harmonious. We don't have to do anything to say, oh, I am going to make the system harmonious. No. What all you can do? Do not try to damage that harmony. You don't have to do anything to maintain it. God has taken care of that. Do not try to do anything to maintain, to damage that harmony. That is the only contribution you can make. If at all we make any contribution, let us not try to disturb that harmony that is already set by the Lord. Okay? So before we enter the forest, there was order. The forest, the trees were all fine, everything was fine. We entered into the forest and what we did? That's all. We all know what we did. In the names of advancement, we have done all those things then. So before we entered the oceans, there was harmony there. Now we entered into the oceans. There is all this oil spill, this, that and all. All this harmony is lost, all those things. So before we entered any portion of the earth, there was order. We entered in some portion of the earth, there's a problem. The Arctic, Antarctic, wherever you go, there is a problem. Here we go there. Because Lord created order and he knows also how to maintain it. So he can maintain it. Our role is not to disturb that at all. For whose good? For our own good. It's not for God's good. For our own good, we should not disturb it. We should not damage it. So Krishna says, evam pravartitam chakram. This cycle, which has been already initiated by me. By me means the Lord Krishna. This cycle, which is already initiated by me, even before you were born, O Arjuna, even before you were born, this cycle was initiated by me. I do not need your help to maintain that cycle. I initiated even before you were born. I don't need you to maintain that. I want your help only in one way. Do not disturb that cycle. Do not disturb it. Do not cause your contribution would be, do not cause confusion. Do not damage it. And the one who does not do that, saha indriyaramaha. Indriyaramaha, such a selfish person who thinks for himself alone. Aramaha means, aramaha is like a garden, a pleasure ground, a place you can. Aram means where you can rest and you can spend time peacefully, right? That is aramaha. Indriya aramaha means sense organs. So this person is always in the realm of sensual pleasures only. This is that guy who is always in the realm of only sensual pleasures. He is a sensualist for whom purushartha is only kama. Purushartha, for him is only kama is the purushartha, his own personal enjoyment. That alone is his purushartha. That's why. So one who does not want any discipline, this person does not want any discipline at all, who does not want to share with others, such a person, he is called, and he is agayuhu. Agayuhu. His very life is thriving on sin. How strong Krishna says. Agayuhu. Life thrives on sin. Agam means papam. Agam means sins. Agam papam. Agayuhu means papam eva ayuhu. Yes, yeah. For him, life itself is a sin. For his entire life. He is not living on food or on blood or anything. He lives on sin. Such a person, he does not live on food. He lives on sin. What a strong remark. Because every moment that person is sinful. Every moment of his life he is sinful. He is a disturbance to the society. He thinks he lives comfortably. But he is causing disturbance to society where he lives. From where he takes so much. From the society, every moment of our life we live, he takes so much from the society. But he is causing harm to the same society. Why chandala is called a chandala? A dog is a very, very grateful animal. When this guy comes, it comes with gratitude, wagging its tail. But what this guy does? He kills that dog and eats. What a chandala he is. That's what these people do. The society offers so much to them, to him. But he tries to kill that society. And then try to take it to his advantage. And he is such a person. So he is calling agayu, a person who lives on sin only. Such a person. So saha mogam jivati. Such a person is living in vain. His life is futile. No purusharthas. It's a very futile life for such a person. He lives in vain only. His life has no benefit either to himself nor to the society. For such a person who is an agayu. Okay. Because when the other look back and see what benefits we had because of this person, what did I get from him? Nothing. Nothing to say at all about him. So if you get more, normally people feel happy. Yeah, they feel cost effective is happy for them. They pay less and get more. Cost effective. Right? It's happy. But what is this guy's cost? He get more, pay less in real society. From everything else, he gets tried to get more. Gives very little to them. This is his cost effectiveness. Causing damage to the entire cosmic system, entire societal status. So, how do we know whether a human being is worth the while or not? How do we know that? How does the society measure it? From the person, this man lived on the earth for 70, 80 years. What benefit to the country this person made? What benefit to the society he has made? You look at any of them, there will be only 0, 0 or negative many times. What benefit society got out of this 80-year-old guy? Nothing. That's what they normally think. So this man lived a life which is a futile life. A life in vain. That's what Krishna says is supposed to be mogam jivati. Saha mogam jivati. Such a person. So they found that he had eaten 3 to 4 times a day. No problem at all. And for all the 70 years he has eaten that. The society produced food. Somebody tilled the soil. Somebody did all these things. They brought milk to his door. He did enjoyed all of them. But contributed nothing back to the society. So next time God decides, what he decides now? That this person does not deserve to be a human person at all. So make him something else of a lower life. That's what the God decides. So make him at least, you know, a plant or animal which can contribute more. This guy as a human being did not contribute anything. So let me make him something else so that he can contribute more. So let me demote him to whatever else it is, whether a plant or an animal. He can do that. So Krishna says, mogam sajivati. He lives in vain only. And if he did not contribute anything to the world, at least did he get his own purushartha? Okay, we may ask that question. Okay, he has not contributed anything to the world. Fine. Did he get anything to himself? That question may be there. Okay, he lived all these years. Did I get anything to myself? Yes. But he also did not fulfill his dharma or moksha purushartha also. If he did not contribute anything to the world, at least moksha purushartha or anything did he gain? He did not gain any of the mass. His life was not useful to himself also. Not to himself, not to the others also. The one who does not do dharma, his life is like what? Krishna says here, Lohakara Bhadra. Lohakara Bhadra. Krishna is not saying. Lohakara Bhadra means as iron smith. And iron smith is Lohakara. Lohakara, Loha means metal. So Lohakara smith is this iron smith. You know, we know blacksmiths, iron smiths. But these guys, what they have? They have got a kind of a pipe or something which you for blowing, you know, you press it, air blows with and make the fire lit. So it goes on blowing. What that does? It breathes, right? Go on bringing it breathes. So between this and this guy, there's no difference. That's what he says. He is like a Lohakara Bhadra. He is like that pipe.
that thing, whatever that instrument is there with which they blow, his lung is also blowing, breathing in and out. It does the same thing. There is no difference between that thing, that inert thing, and this person. He lived for 80 years, no use to society at all. That's what he says. So mogam sajivati, Arjuna, because of that you do karma yoga. So don't just keep quiet, you do karma yoga. So from this angle also you should take to karma yoga, not karma yoga you should take to. So what are the things he says now? Four angles we have seen. Niyatam kuru karma, that's what he said. Command of the Lord, niyatam. Do it as a duty of the Lord. That is the first angle of karma yoga. It's a dutiful life, a life based on duty. This is my duty to do this, I do that. Then as a yajna, do the whatever action you do, do it as a worship to the Lord, as a contribution to the Lord, yajna. And as a yoga, that is interested in yourself. I want to gain moksha, I want to gain chitta shuddhi, I want to get purity of mind. So as a yoga you do it. So even if none of these things appeal to you, because for all the three things you need some faith. If you need to do it duty as a commandment of the Lord, you should believe in Lord. There is a Lord who gives commandments, I should believe in that. And having believed, I have a sense of fear. Oh, it is out of fear I might do. No, you don't want to have fear, fine. You don't want to believe in the Lord, fine. As an yajna, also worship to the Lord, you have to believe in the Lord. Okay, you are an atheist, no belief in Lord, fine. And if you want to do it as a yoga, where you want to get the moksha purusharta, you don't believe in moksha, you don't think, who knows where is moksha? People all argue, right? Who knows there is a moksha? Who has gone there? Okay. If you don't want to believe in moksha, fine. But at least for this, to maintain harmony in living, at least to be in harmony with the other things with whom you exist, the other plants, animals, other human beings with whom all you exist, you try to maintain good, be a good citizen. That no, for that you don't need any faith in God. To be a good citizen, there is no need for faith in God. So if you are an atheist also, doesn't matter. Have faith in the society, the people with whom you live. You be grateful to them. Gratitude is a basic sense, it's a basic value. So at least be grateful to them. Do not cause damage to them anymore. So Krishna tries to argue in all these angles as the karma yoga thing. So here you have the opportunity to fight this war, to follow this karma yoga. Do it as your duty, you are a kshatriya. And they are all atatayis, they are all sinners. And now as a king, it is your duty to punish them. So you have to uphold this dharma and then fight this war. Do not try to run away from this war. How long this karma yoga should be practiced? I want to go moksha, fine. How long should I practice this? So you have prescribed something. What is the time frame? We want to know, right? How long this course will offer within these so many days? So you have given a karma yoga course. How long it will take for me to get my goal? How long this should be practiced? And what is the end result of this karma yoga? So these are all questions. Krishna says it is a lifelong process. Don't think it can be taken by 3 credits, 4 credits. No, it's a lifelong process. He gives karma yoga phalam here, where karma yoga will ultimately lead a person to. That is what he is trying to tell us here. So we have already seen this here. Yeah? So karma yoga will lead to what? Chitta shuddhi. Not karma jnana. Be careful. Karma yoga will lead to chitta shuddhi. From chitta shuddhi, you also do upasana. So chitta ekagrata, you will have concentration. And from there, you go to jnana marga. And then you do shravanam, mananam, nididhyasanam. And finally, you make it jnana. So that is the route. There is no short circuit to this. Nobody cannot jump, nobody can jump directly to jnana. This is the process. This is the only process. Okay? So karma yoga will lead to chitta shuddhi, purification of the mind. That's what it will lead. Our desire for worldly objects, that will become less and less. By being a karma yogi, our desire for worldly pleasures, that will become less and less. That's what it will do. Actually, we have seen the second chapter, Yadate, Moha Kalilam, Buddhir, Vedi Parishyati. Remember that, Shmaga? So, the benefit of karma yoga is the delusion regarding what is the source of joy, that will be completely gone. We are all now thinking the source of joy is something else. That delusion will be completely gone. Source of joy is not something else. Not video games, nor any of those thoughts, right? They are for that time. Good time pass. Okay. Source of joy is not. So, nityam, anitya vastu viveka will come. What is permanent and what is ephemeral? That viveka, that knowledge will come. That discriminative ability, what is good for us, what is not good for us. What will bring me shreyas, that will come. So we come to know that depending on the worldly things for happiness is the most miserable thing. We come to know that. By practicing karma yoga, we will understand that dependence on worldly things is the cause for most misery. That's what we will understand. And that is why if kamya karma, you know, it increases. When kamya karma increases, what happens? Selfishness increases. Because I do this karma expecting something, it is fulfilled. I want to get more. I become greedy, I want to do more such things so that I will gain even more. We keep on doing that. That's what karma karma does. So because we have a wrong idea that having certain things around will give me happiness. We always think. So if I have all these things, it is not just only thing. People, by having people around me, by having my children around me, all friends around me, I become happy. Oh, they are all around me, no problem. If they are all gone, you will be unhappy. The dependence on any of these things, if you have that, you can be happy with them. Nothing wrong in that. That's fine. You show your happiness when they are around. That is nice. It's actually, you should do it also. Because they should be happy that you are happy about their presence. We should do all that. But when they leave, don't start crying. Your happiness should not depend on anything including people relations. It should be independent of anything. Atmani eva, atmana atushtaha. Person should be happy within himself or herself. That should be the thing. So Krishna himself is going to say later. So when I turn to Atma Jnanam, so Karma Yoga, what it does ultimately, it leads to Vairagya. Chitta Shuddhi and Vairagya it leads to. And desire for Atma Jnanam. I have to promote myself. I have to know who I am. All these questions will come. Once you get a pure mind, the mind is pure, there you can, the reflection will be very clear there. It will not be a dirty reflection. So if your mind is clear, it's not a dirty mirror anymore. So he will get Vairagyam and then he can try to gain Atmajnanam. So when I turn to Atmajnanam, then the scriptures, what it will say? They will say, it has to be gained by Vedanta Vichara only. Atmajnanam cannot be given by, you cannot buy one, get one free anywhere. It has to be gained only by Vedanta Vichara. Shravanam, Mananam, Nidhyasanam has to be done. You have to do inquiry of yourself. There is no other shortcut. That's what Vedanta will say. So, actually Krishna, for which he is going to say later, Tadviddhi Pranipatena Parippreshnena Sevaya Upadekshandite Jnanam Jnaninas Tattvadarshinaha. Go to the teacher. Do all the kaingariya to him. Wash his clothes. Do everything to him. And be with him. And try to learn this Jnanam from him. That is why the Guru is necessary. So once Chitta Shuddhi comes, once the purity of mind comes, and through upasana, when the mind becomes one-pointed, seek the help of a teacher who will orient you in the right direction through that. So do all the seva to him, all the kaingalyam to the teacher, and then learn from him. And that is how you can elevate yourself. Krishna is going to say it later, we will see at that time. So in short, what? A karma yogi will go to Vedanta Vichara to know who am I. If you are not a karma yogi, you will never turn your attention to that at all. It will be only words. Aham Brahmasmi will be words. Everybody will, they will go to some Upanishad lecture here and there and hear those words and say, I know Advaita, no problem. Aham Brahmasmi, I know it. Only mind should be pure, sir. If you do with pure mind, no problem at all. All these, they are all words. Are they living, any one of them? Even for at least a minutest portion of time? No. Mind has still all the dirt. But these words will come, no problem. They have heard here and there, it will come, no problem at all. So Krishna says it should be lived. So through Vedanta Vichara, with the help of a guru, most important. Because if it is not done through a guru, if it is not a guru also who has learned through the paramparas, who has known through the scriptures, then it will become half-baked. It will be a knowledge which may not be completely perfect knowledge. It may have doshas. So it should be a defect-free knowledge. So the person then discovers that I am the Atma. After this, he will find out that I am the Atma, which is free from all limitations. No limitations whatsoever, and does not depend on anything else, whether it is people, person, things, doesn't matter, for its happiness. So that is what they will discover once they go to this Jnana Marga. That's what he says. So what is the nature of the Atma? Actually, we have already seen it in the second chapter, Krishna in the Sankhya Yoga section. Slokas 12 to 25, he has already said, Achedyoyam, Adakyoyam, Akledyo Shoshayavacham, Nitya Samagana Sthanuhu, Acharoyam Sanatanaha, Najayasem, Najayatem Riyateva Katvachitem, Nayam Bhutvam, Bhavita, Tvam. Okay. So all these shlokas, Krishna has already described about the nature of Atma. So we have already seen that earlier. So that means Atma is what? Is Purna Swarupaha. It doesn't lack anything. The moment I think I want something, I am not Purnaha yet. Infinity cannot be made any more infinity. It is infinity already. So if you are a Purna Vastu, nothing is lacking. If I think that I lack something, by gaining that I feel I will be happy. Because I lack something means by gaining something I think I will become happy. So if somebody thinks he has to gain something to be happy, he is apurnaha, he is not purnaha yet. So Atma is purna vastu, it is infinite vastu. So the person who understands that aham purna swarupaha asmi, if he thinks like that, then he is ananda swarupaha asmi, that person is a jnani. Otherwise, all the people are only ajnanis one. So from Vedanta, this person comes to know that the only source of joy in the world is myself alone, period. The only source of joy for me is what? Myself alone, period. Nothing else. All other things are all dependencies. This alone is myself, no other source of joy at all. That's what he understands after learning Vedanta. Till he comes to Vedanta, all other joy, they will be all, you know, interim joys. He can get here and there. But not the perfect. So if at all I see any joy outside, it is not that joy is coming from outside. I have to understand that clearly. If I see some joy outside, I go somewhere, I am happy somewhere. It is not that joy comes from outside. It is only a reflection of my own joy seen there. That is how I should understand. If I see a joy somewhere, it is not that joy came from there. It is only my own joy, the reflection of my own joy, seen there, that's all. So, if at all any joy outside, that's it is. Just like when there is a mirror. There is a mirror, I see my own face in the mirror. Once the mirror is gone, my face is gone from the mirror only. My face is there. My joy is there all the time. If I only see the reflection of it, that situation became congenial for that joy to be reflected. My swarupa is joy. There was a situation like a mirror that became congenial for this joy to be reflected for me to see. I should not think that mirror is joy. Mirror is not joy. Mirror is giving, it became just a medium. So that's what we should think. So this is, music is a mirror. We enjoy music. Music is like a mirror. It's a mirror only. So I see, so there is, you know, there is like a good food. There is some people like, you know, I like food from that restaurant, this restaurant, there are dearest food. I like always, you know, this parpusli and whatever it is. Joy. But nothing wrong. So enjoy parpusli. So no problem at all. But it is your own joy, reflection of your joy in that. That's what you are seeing. There is no new joy came from somewhere. Okay. That's what you should understand. So whatever we consider as a source of joy are nothing but mirror only. Mirror is not joy. Source of joy, nothing is there. So, and I am only seeing the reflected joy of my own. That's why I said that day, it is enjoy. Enjoy, my own joy. Enjoy is my own joy. Enjoy. It's not your joy, it's enjoy. Not one joy, it's enjoy. So, that's what is enjoy all the time, right? She may not understand Tamil. It's enjoy means in Tamil, it's my own joy. So, all this, all the time, I have been going after reflected joy. That's what I have been doing now. All the time, I have been going after reflected joys only. Not minding my own joy, which is the fact that's a fake one. In fact, they are all fake joys. We think that they are the real joys. We go always after them. That is the problem we have. So a Vedantin or a Jnani never runs after reflected joy at all. A Jnani never runs after reflected joy. He wants up his original joy. That's what a Jnani does. He wants up his original joy. He doesn't go after any reflected joy. So that's what we should remember. When he enjoys, he really enjoys his joy. Maybe reflected through anything else. He may be one, sometimes he may be alone. He is enjoying joy, no problem. He is just, he is enjoying, no problem at all. So once I have my joy, because my running after things will completely go away at that time. I won't run after, when I enjoy my own joy, I won't run after anything. I am happy myself. Why should I go anywhere to become happy? No need. I am happy myself. So he is Shantam, he is Shivam, he is Sundaram. Such a person he is. He doesn't have to go anywhere at all. So Atmani Eva, Atmana Tushtaha. That person is such a person. He is Jnani. That will become the ultimate result of Karma Yoga. So Karma Yoga, he will go through Vedanta Vichara and finally gain that Jnanam. So Atmani Evam, Atmana Tushtaha. So Karma Yoga leads to Chitta Shuddhi. That leads to Vedanta Vichara. That leads to Jnanam. That leads to Atmananda Moksha. That is the route. That's the only route. There is no other route. Whether I can gain Moksha through Bhakti Yoga, Bhakti Marga, from Yogas, whether I can do upasanas, all others are all, if they can gain chitta shuddhi through that, fine. None of them will give moksha. Moksha only through this route. So Krishna says, yes tu atmarati reva syat. The one who becomes atmarati. Krishna calls him atmarati. One who revels in himself. Ratihi. Rati means ramana. Ramana means enjoying. Ramana means enjoying. Atmarati. The one who becomes Atmarati, one who revels in himself. Who revels, who enjoys in himself. The one who does not require external things at all to be happy. He wants to be only himself to be happy. Leave me alone, I am happy. Such a person. He doesn't want it. So if you are there, fine. If you are not there, fine too. He is happy. And Atmatriptasya Madhavaha. He is totally contented with himself. Atmatriptasya. Totally contented with himself, triptaha, satisfied with himself, self-sufficient person. Kaupinamandaha, kalu bhagyamandaha, that's what Ashankaracharya said. He is a Kaupinamandaha, he is nothing else. He has only a lion cloth around his waist, nothing else. He is happy, bhagyamandaha. Because he has nothing else to look for. He is full, purnaha. He doesn't need anything. He may have only a Kaupinam, but. So from the worldly angle, you may think he is a beggar. No, he is the richest man on earth. He doesn't lack anything. So that's what he is. That's why Acharya says, Kaupinavantaha kalu bhagyavantaha he is. So to face loneliness is to tell indirectly what? I am not, if I say that I am afraid of loneliness, that means what? I cannot be in joy with myself. That's what it means. I need somebody else. I cannot be lonely. I am afraid of loneliness. I need something else. At least a tape recorder should be there. Some radio should be there. Some people, you know, my son, when he studies, he will put the TV on. I will ask him, you know, what concentration you will have? No, no, it should be there in the background. You need something in the background just to go. Then he will study. He will be studying seriously. But that should be going on. So these are people, you need something around you all the time. You don't want to feel lonely. Because you think loneliness means it's not joyful for you. Whereas for this person, no. He doesn't need any company, period. No TV, no transistors, none of those things. So, the moment you keep them for your company, what does it mean? That becomes more valuable to my life than myself. That's what I think. If you think your joy has to come from the TV, then that becomes more valuable than yourself. You cannot be happy yourself. For entertainment, for source of information, media, that's fine. You want to hear the news? That's absolutely fine, no problem at all. You need to know that also. You need to know, you know, what is happening around. That's fine. There's knowledge. Knowledge is fine. Using these media for gaining knowledge is no problem at all. Depending on them only for enjoyment, then there's a problem. If it is there, you enjoy it. No harm. If it is not there, it's not there. Oh, that place, you know, it's a miserable place. They don't have even a TV there. what place it is, man? There is no TV even there. Right? There's a problem. So how you condemn yourself for things which are very mundane. How people go on, you know, the more you think of, if you think analytically deeper into that, you will see how ridiculous it is. But we don't think that way at all. We immediately think, oh, they are all source of happiness for me. Without that, I cannot exist. That's what I think. And not only that, Krishna goes even one more step further. Atmani evacha santushtaha. We have seen this earlier. Because we may think that jnani is happy with atma. Right? Now we are thinking about the jnani. Jnani, I am ajnani. I am happy with all these other things. Right? But jnani is happy with what? He is happy with atma. That jnani is happy with atma. So he gets ananda from atma. That is the conclusion I make now. Atmi, jnani gains ananda from where? From atma. So then we may think that he gets ananda from anatma also. That is the thing we may, if I call a jnani, he gets ananda from atma, but jnani is ever happy. So he gets ananda from anatma also. That's what we will think. So atma is also a source of joy, is what we will think. Because for the anatma, source of joy is so many things. So for the jnani, source of joy is atma. That's what we think. Because he gains joy from atma, we will think that atma is a source of joy for the jnani. That's what we may think. Father Krishna says, no, for a jnani, atma is the only source of joy. It's not a source of joy also. It is the only source of joy. For the jnani, atma is the only source of joy. It is not also a source of joy. Okay, that's what he thinks. So for that also Krishna says no. So atmani evacha santushtaha. And what does it mean? He does not look upon anatma as a source of joy at all. A jnani does not look at the body. Anatma is body. As a source of joy at all, anytime. He never attributes ananda to anatma. Ananda is joy, happiness, bliss. He does not associate bliss with anatma, the body, or to external objects. He doesn't associate any happiness with any of them. Then does it mean whether he will be miserable when anatma comes? You may ask that question. Okay, he doesn't attribute happiness to them. Okay. But if it comes, will he feel miserable? Oh, you just ask him what to do. Oh, this guy has some idea. I never liked this guy at all. He first doesn't have likes and dislikes. So this guy comes. So will he become miserable because such and such a thing came? Because anatma showed up. When we say that he is happy only with atma, then can we think he will be unhappy with anatma? You know how analytical Krishna is. These questions, whether we may ask or not, he answers all of them. Because somebody might ask these things. They may have these wrong conceptions. When we say he is happy with atma only, then can it be that he is unhappy with anatma? Right? That question might come. So Krishna tries to even say that. He says, no. When there is a situation to be happy, when there is a situation to be joyful, he will also be happy. No problem. Jnani also will be happy. When there is a situation to be happy, he will be. He will also enjoy everything in life like everybody else. No problem. He will go on doing it. The only things, when he enjoys, he does not conclude that joy comes from that. He is enjoying all right, but he enjoys, he doesn't conclude joy came from that thing. He is aware all the time that the situation was ideal for the manifestation of my joy. He is always joyful. There was a situation which was congenial for the manifestation of his joy, like a mirror. So that is all he knows. He knows that much, he knows only that much, because that is all he has to know, because the source of joy is nothing external, it is himself. So that joy does not come from anywhere else, it only happened to be the expression of my own joy, my own happiness. The situation was only like a mirror. That is what the jnani thinks. That's what he will always attribute. So, a jnani also enjoys every situation. When he enjoys, he does not attribute the joy to the situation itself. Okay? But to himself. So, this situation is only a nimitta. We can call it a nimitta or an instrument, like a mirror. Like, not, it's not a karana. It is not a cause. It's only a nimitta. Then, what is the advantage in that case, if he has to think like that? So, both the jnani and ajnani, they both enjoy. The situation was there. Jnani enjoys, Ajnani also enjoys. Yes, he is also enjoying that. So what is this difference between them? When Ajnani enjoys, what does he do? When the Ajnani enjoys, he attributes the joy to that object. Ajnani attributes his joy to that object. Whereas Jnani attributes the joy to his own self. That is the difference between the Jnani and Ajnani. So situation remaining same. Whatever happiness arose in both the people being same, the jnani thinks the source of joy is myself, only the situation was congenial to reflect my joy, Whereas the Ajnani thinks the source of joy is that mirror itself. That is the difference between these two. So the moment I attribute joy to anything, the problem is I have to keep them all the time. That's the problem. The moment I attribute joy to something else external, then I strive to keep them all the time. I become selfish. I want to hold it. I have to do all those things. And when they go, what happens? I say happiness went away. See how, if you think closely, how it becomes, you know, when that goes, what I think? My happiness went away with it. That's what I think. My happiness went away with it. So this is the problem with Ajnani, who attributes joy to perishable objects. That object with, on which I thought the joy is, it is a perishable object. It is going to go away one day. May not be today, may not be tomorrow, maybe after some time it will go away. So I am now thinking my joy depends on that perishable object. That's what this Ajnani thinks. And along with the object, the joy also will go away. That's what he thinks. So he has to run after them. So always he is after the joy. Always he is running after them. He is running from here, from there. Every moment in life he is spending to gain joy, happiness from this or that. That's what he is doing all the time. Whereas in the case of a jnani, when the sense object is gone, he never says the joy is gone. For the jnani, when the sense object is gone, he never says joy is gone. Just as when the mirror breaks, we never say, I am broken. The mirror is broken. I never say, I saw my reflection in the mirror. I was happy to see my reflection. Nope, I adjusted all hair, everything. When the mirror breaks, I don't say, I am broken. That's what we don't do, right? Because my reflected image only is broken. I am not broken. This jnani knows it all the time in practical life situations. That is the most important of a jnani and an ajnani. So I don't see my face in front, but that does not mean my face is gone. My face is very much there. The original face is always there. I don't try that the face is gone. So whenever situation goes, whatever may be the situation, whenever that goes, only the reflected ananda goes. Only the reflected ananda goes, but the original ananda, that is me, ever stays. That is for a jnani. Jnani thinks, I am the ananda swarupaha. I ever remain joyful. Only the reflected medium is gone. So another situation comes again, still my ananda is reflected and so on, and a new thing also, it keeps on changing, no problem. But I remain ever joyful. I remain ever ananda swarupaha. That is what a jnani thinks. Okay? So reflection comes and reflection may go, but the original ananda ever remains for the jnani. So the jnani is least bothered even in the greatest loss. Whatever may be the greatest loss one can think of in the relative world, jnani never think it is a loss at all for him. Not at all. So, atmani evacha santushta. So, example is what? Normally, the dog and the bone, you know, normally you throw a bone to the dog. What the dog does? The dog bites the bone. So, when it bites the bone, what happens? Some blood comes out of its own gum. It tastes the blood. So, what it thinks? The bone is tasty. It bites more. Right? It keeps on doing that. That's what the dog does. So afterwards, another bone comes, it keeps on going. So this jnani, what he does? Atmani eva santushtaha. It comes only from me. Source of joy is only me. Only the bone was a meaning. Yeah. So the one who is happy with himself alone, atmani eva cha santushtaha. Tasya karyam na vidyate. For him, there is nothing to be accomplished in life at all. For such a jnani, there is nothing to be accomplished at all. Tasya karyam na vidyate. Because he has achieved the highest. A jnani has achieved the highest, the infinite, the fourth purushartha, namely moksha. Dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. He has reached the moksha. He has gained the highest purushartha. So he doesn't have to strive to look for anything else at all in life. He has nothing to look up in life. So he is happy with himself. Aham Purnaha Asmi, Aham Tuttaha Asmi, Aham Purnaha Asmi, all the time Aham Brahma Asmi. He knows that. That person knows that. So Yavan Artha Udapani, Sarvataha, Samprutodake. That sloga you remember? Tavan Sarveshu Vedeshu, Brahmanasya Vijanataha. So when there is a ocean full of fresh water, why should I go after a small well or a pond that is available to me in plenty? Right? That's what the jnani knows. I am always ever remaining in joy, full state. I don't need to go for any small mundane things for my joy at all. So when I've got a whole ocean full of fresh water, I will not go after any small pond. That's what that shloka said. So the one who has got moksha ananda, moksha purusha ananda, he will never go after any vishaya ananda at all. Vishaya ananda means ananda coming from objects, in small objects, this and that. He won't go after that. Not only objects, people also. We should understand. When I say object, people also. I am happy when so and so came. No. He is happy all the time. He is happy when they came also. He is happy when they came also. But he is happy all the time. Tasya karyam. So then we should not ask. Then when they went also, will he be happy? Yes, he will be happy. He will be happy not because they went. He is happy always. Whether they came in, he is happy. Whether they went, no. He is happy all the time. So his coming in also, he expressed happiness. When they went also, he is not going to tell them, oh, I am very happy that you are gone. He is not going to tell them. But his happiness did not change. Tasya karyam na vidyate. He need not do even karma yoga. For such a jnani, he wouldn't have to even do karma yoga. He has already reached that stage. He doesn't have to do karma yoga. Normally people will say, oh, he is a great jnani sir. Normally they go to some acharyas or big people. Oh, they describe him. He is a great karma yogi. Karma yogi is an ajnani, and we should understand that. Karma yogi is still an ajnani only. Jnani is only jnani. Karma yogi is still ajnani. He doesn't have jnanam yet. He doesn't have aham brahmasmi jnanam yet. He's a karma yogi. That's fine. Whatever karma he does, he offers it to the Lord. That's fine. And whatever result comes, he accepts it happily. That's all the difference. He doesn't still know that he aham purnahasmi, that he doesn't know yet. He is still only a karma yogi. So he is not a jnani yet. So he is still an ajnani. So karma is for the jnani, there is no karma at all for that person. He is no karma. That's why sarvadharman parityajya mamekam sharana prajam. Krishna says, when you become a jnani, you can now renounce all dharmas, no problem, when you are a jnani. But normally people misquote this shloka. Krishna himself is told, no, you can abandon all dharmas, no problem. Krishna has told, right? Sarvadharman parityajya mamekam sharanam prajam. They think sharanam is something very easy. Sharanagati, they think is very easy. Sharanagati is, how difficult is sharanagati, you know? My God, even think of it is so mind-boggling thing. And people normally misquote these shlokas. They out of context. When they say sarva dharman parityajya, it is for a jnani. For jnani, all these worldly dharmas, he doesn't have to worry about any of them because he is already a jnani. He is in moksha all the time. He is a jivan muktaha. That person in this janma itself, he has become liberated. So videha mukti also is automatic for him when this body goes away for this jnani. Okay. So karma is not there for him. Neither dharma, he is beyond all rules and regulations. He doesn't have to follow any of them. He can be just himself. So tasya karyam na vidyate. If at all he does any action, and the jnani also he does action. He just, because of this, he's not keeping quiet. He does some action. He does not do it for the sake of any result for himself. He doesn't do anything for himself, for his ananda, but he does all this. So he is not doing any action for ananda, but he does all actions out of ananda. Only the preposition is different. When a jnani does action, he does not do action for ananda, for gaining ananda, but he does action out of ananda. He is ever ananda swarupaha. So out of ananda he does, not for gaining ananda from ananda. So that's the difference between jnani and ajnani. Ajnani always does action for ananda. For gaining happiness, I do actions. Whereas jnani does, I am always happy, out of happiness I am doing this. That's what the jnani does. So only the preposition is different between them. So ajnani does for happiness, jnani does out of happiness. So for means misery. The moment I say I want to do action for ananda means misery. Because you may get, you may not get. You may do some action expecting a result which will give you happiness. That's what you may think. But it may become otherwise. Then you will become unhappy. So this is always possible. So far means misery always. Out of means always happy. No problem at all. I am already happy. So whatever action I do, I am happy to do it. So I don't look at the result of that action. Whatever action I have done, I may do it with lot of clarity, with lot of effort. I may plan very well. All these things I may do, no problem at all. But I know extremely well, my authority is only till I do the action. The moment I do the action, I have no power on the result. That I know, the jnani knows. The karma yogi also knows. So that's what he knows. So I enjoy every moment of my activity. That is what the jnani knows. So once I am a jnani, then the life becomes a music for me. I enjoy it, every moment of it. Life itself becomes a music. Action becomes a music. Everything becomes a music. Everything becomes enjoyable, which alone is called moksha. Moksha is not something somewhere there is a heaven, you go to that Vaikuntha. No. Moksha is right here. You enjoy it every moment of life we can. Once that awareness comes. Because if you go to any Punyaloka, as I have told many times, you can go to Kailasa, you can go to Vaikuntha, you can go to Brahmaloka. Brahmaloka where Brahmaji is there. The life is very long. I have told what is the lifespan of Brahmaji. It's very, very long lifespan. People can live for a very long life. No, there is no thirst, no hunger. All the time everything is peaceful, no problem. How long you can be there? As long as your Punya is there. Shine Punya, Matya Lokam Vishanti. Once the Punya checkbook is exhausted, come back. It doesn't give you moksha. You can go to all these Punya Lokas. You can go to Vaikuntha. You can stay with Mahavishnu. Very nice. Very beautiful. Mahavishnu, everything around is so peaceful, so nice. Everything is so enjoyable. Can be there. No problem. How long? Again, Shine Punya, Matya Lokam Vishanti. So once for all, you can, by doing Punya Karmas, you can go to Punya Lokas. No problem. You can do Punya Karmas. Lot of Punya Karma, I want to do. Lot of Dharmas, I want to do. I will get Punya. By Punya, I will go to Punya Lokas. No problem. But will you give me Moksha? No. Moksha is right here. For that, this he should become a Jnani. That alone gives Moksha. That's what Krishna says. So this alone is the ultimate palam of Karma Yoga. So Karma Yoga gives rise to Chitta Shuddhi. Then go to Atma Vicharaha. You go through Jnana Yoga. And after Jnana Yoga, you gain Jnana. Sravanam, Mananam, Vidyasam you go through. And then you gain Jnana. Jnana to Moksha. Moksha means Jivan Muktaha. In this Janma itself, in this birth itself, you become Mukta Purushaha, become liberated. Then once you are liberated in this Janma itself, once after death, the person, there is no need to gain another body. I have told this earlier. I have told this, the Videha Mukta, the principle. After dying, the person, because you need another body only to exhaust your karmas. When there is no karma, balam is remaining for you because you have become a Jivan Muktaha, there is no need to gain another body either to enjoy or suffer the karma balam. So he becomes a Videha Mukta also. So he is Jivan Muktaha and Videha Muktaha, he is a Jnani. So this alone is the ultimate param of Karma Yoga. So Krishna is going to talk about the same idea in the next sloka. He is going to clarify this further in the next sloka, which maybe we can see in next class because it may take longer time. I have to make some more discussion. Yeah.
Yeah.
Smriti Granthas, what about them?
I mean, because they are written by human beings, should it be followed?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question, actually.